on maynard.com.au. Hey, you! Hello, is that Mr. Adam Curry?
Yes, the one and only. Oh, hold on one second. I'm just about to do an interview with ABC in Australia. Good deal, baby. I'll see you later. Bye. Love you. Bye. Maynard!
Hello, you're talking to John C. Dvorak there.
Yeah, when I say I love you, you know it's me and John, right?
Let's do it. Let's propagate now.
I'm ready to roll.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have on the line a man who is known as the Lone Wolf, a former Soviet spy, Mr. Adam Curry, who is the co-host of the No Agenda Show with John C. Dvorak in the morning, one of the greatest podcasts you could ever listen to, and their mission is none other than to change reality itself. Hello, Adam.
In the morning to you, Maynard. Always nice to hear you explain everything about me.
Was that kind of right? Was that what I was saying there? Was that your life in one sort of little intro?
I'll take it. You know, I've done a lot. I consider myself a media assassin more than anything these days, though, to be quite honest.
Now, people hear the word assassin and they think, ooh, violence. Now, not necessarily so.
I've been in media all my life. I started in radio when I was 15 And I grew up in Amsterdam, actually, and worked on pirate radio there for a while and a hospital closed circuit station, which is great because the audience isn't going anywhere. And when I was 19, I got my first gig on television doing a music show in the Netherlands called Countdown, which is actually interesting because, of course, some of your listeners will remember Molly from Countdown in Australia.
Huge legendary show here, too, yeah.
And then MTV in the U.S., I am American by birth, MTV in the U.S. saw me and they asked me to come and work for them. And I moved to New York in 87 and spent about almost 8 years on air at MTV in the United States. And then left and then went into business. I've always had a parallel life of a geek, kind of, yeah, a hybrid between a media person and an engineering technical person. I'm not a great programmer or anything or developer, but I understand the concepts and I'm pretty good at communicating back and forth between the two worlds. The past year, well, actually the past, in 2007 it is now, I started having Skype conversations with a gentleman I'd met in San Francisco where I just started a company. His name is John C. Dvorak. He's a little bit older than I am. No one knows exactly how old he is. He's a very well-known tech journalist, but he's a very interesting guy. He's held a number of crazy positions throughout life, has a lot of knowledge, also just life experience.
He's seen Jimi Hendrix more than once live.
Yeah, exactly. This is the kind of guy he is. So he has tons of interesting stories. Not a lot of people like him.
And Sarah Palin's never been anywhere. She's pretty much of a local girl that just has never seen anything. So you get no, you know, you get no confluence of ideas. You're just kind of basically you're a local yokel. And they want that to be the president. You don't want that to be the president. You want somebody that's smarter than you to be the president, not somebody dumber than you to be the president.
Because he's kind of misunderstood. And I think we both kind of we were drawn to each other in that regard. We like chatting. And one day I said, you know, we chat, you know, once a week on Skype. I said, you know, why don't we record that and make it a podcast and people can listen in because I think there's some interesting stuff. It's about politics. It's about food. He's a judge in wine contests and that is fascinating. And we didn't always agree on stuff. And it's nice when you're arrogant like me and when you're arrogant like him and there's someone who's saying, you know, you're full of crap.
Often I get the feeling John will say something just to wind the other people up.
So I'm going to tell everybody out there listening to this show that California for some years now has become the Amsterdam of the United States. If you are a weed or dope smoker, I would recommend to move to California.
Yes, and he admits to that. He's quite famous for being an anti-Mac person, which I've found out. And he's actually admitted to this publicly as well, that he would really do that just to wind up the Mac, the Apple fanboys. These days, actually, I know that he possesses a couple of Apple Macintoshes and likes the product. He might have liked it all along. But he was actually famously the guy who said, this thing with the mouse, I don't think it'll take off.
He's someone that's also been handy throughout your life and some of the experiences you've had that haven't been positive to help you through them, as well as a guy that's been around a bit longer.
That's interesting you say that. Yes, we don't speak outside of our podcast. That's one of the rules we have, and it's part of the media experience. You know, if you say, hey, let's talk about this, or, oh, I was thinking about that, when you try to replicate that on air, you never get the same response. It never comes out the same way, and it kind of sucks. So whenever I've said to him, no, you're kind of like a brother or an older brother or a father figure, he hangs up. You know, he doesn't like hearing that.
Because you also have another podcast called The Daily Source Code, which was once daily.
$16 million worth of airplanes strapped to my ass.
Transmitters?
Then the next generation radio content in my ears.
We don't need no stinking transmitters.
I like to think I'm flying into the future. Podcasting is Adam Curry.
At times you just, it's almost like you're on the therapy couch listening to Adam. And I like that. I like that a lot.
So when podcasting started, and for those of your listeners who aren't familiar with the term, but I was part of the development of that as a radio guy, and it was born out of frustration. The entire idea was, I want to just have a radio show that automatically updates when there's a new episode on my iPod, and later, of course, iPhones and other MP3 players, etc. And in order to help the developers, the engineers who were making the software for this, I said, well, why don't I do a daily show so you'll have something to work against? Because if there's not something that comes out every single day, then you won't know if the system is working. And I figured I'd call it something that would appeal to developers, hence the name Source Code, which is a name for the raw code that sits behind any computer program. And I had to talk about something. At the time, weblogging was also just taking off, so I kind of turned it into an audio weblog in a way, where I just talked about what I was doing. And at the time, I had successfully sold my company, so I really didn't have a job. I thought I would kind of retire. I was flying helicopters, and I'd take the recorder everywhere and talk about my life and what was happening. So at times it's about technology. At times it was about flying a lot, as I was learning how to fly and getting my helicopter and fixed-wing license. And I am a radio guy, as I said. I like theater of the mind, so I played a lot of tricks and experimented on things that could never be done on the radio, certainly not back in the day, and maybe even less so today. Then as I was moving house and just all kinds of things, setting up a new company, it was all a part of it. And these days it is less frequent because it's kind of morphed into a more of an open source music driven show. I'm completely breaking the law. If I do the show, it's about 3 hours in length, and it's just typically done on a Friday. We call it the FUBAR Friday, and it's just a steam release for me, and I just let loose, and I let my emotions flow. A lot of it is politically motivated, as I am now somewhat older and angry about what's happening in the world. It's a good place for me to vent.
And you vent on the cowbell or on the percussion stand you have near the microphone.
Of course, the cowbell is very important in American music. Every musician knows it just sounds better if it has cowbell. If it already has cowbell, it probably needs more cowbell.
Creedence Clearwater Revival, Down on the Corner. Where would that be without the cowbell? Copacabana. Da-na-na-na.
Right?
Exactly. And also, I love how you've got the No Agenda stream now, so you've basically got a continuous stream of songs chosen by the audience that the computer pulls at random from a file. Is that correct?
This was a big aha moment. As a kid, I've always dreamed of having my own radio stations, and hence I was involved in a lot of pirate radio. The hardest part of a 24-hour-a-day station is scheduling the music, particularly if it's globally, because you may be in the mood for something when it's evening here, it's a different time in Australia. You may not be in the mood for the type of music that is played on the station. It was actually one of our producers. Listeners are not just listeners; they help produce the show. They started implementing, when I couldn't do a show, they would do an open source daily source code. And the way it works is there's this file sharing program called Dropbox. It's very popular. It's very simple. You sign up to the service. You get a little folder on your computer. You can just drop your files in there. And any other computer you have, the files automatically show up there. You can also share a folder with someone else. And so we created an open folder, and people can just drop their favorite songs in there. And I've set up some automation. It's all very easy these days to do all this on the computer. And the computer basically just goes in and says, ah, here's something new. Let's play it. And then if it's been played, it doesn't play it for a little while. And eventually, you know, people can pull stuff out, put stuff in. So they're really managing the whole sound of the station. And it's phenomenal because you hear stuff you've never heard before or different versions and stuff that plays into what's happening in the world. It's a grand experiment that I'm documenting. It's very exciting, and it's actually pleasant to listen to.
And Adam, is there a profile of the average No Agenda listener?
I don't know if there's, I mean, we know the age range is everywhere from 15-year-old kids to we have 87-year-old listening. It's hundreds of thousands worldwide. But it is typically people who have a nagging feeling that they're being lied to. And this nagging feeling comes from the fact that they're being lied to, and mainly by mainstream news organizations who have multiple agendas. Any type of commercial media, the actual programming is not the product, but the audience is the product. And let me just explain that. If you're watching a commercial television station, yeah, you may think that that station is serving you with great programming. What they're really doing, and will do anything to make it happen, witness the birth of reality television, is they are selling you as an audience, as an aggregate, as a demographic to advertisers. That, in today's world of the internet and complete interconnectivity between human beings, it's kind of annoying. And people can't really put their finger on it. They don't always feel what it is, but they know there's a lot of bull crap being passed around. And when you tune into No Agenda, invariably, and we do it twice a week, you're going to hear us discussing a topic, and from our media backgrounds, our experiential backgrounds, John's background as a journalist, my background as an entertainment person, we're going to lift the veil and say, well, here's really how it works. 90% of all news today comes from a survey. Big PR companies, I'll name one, Hill & Knowlton, get contracted for millions of dollars to promote a product. We're seeing it right now, actually, with high-speed rail in the United States, but it's propagated throughout the world. They'll have surveys, and they'll pay either a research institute, or sometimes it's even a university through funding and endowments, or they even open up their own research arms and will come up with a study that is skewed. And once there's a study that says, oh, well, did you know that? That becomes news. And it's fascinating to trace this back and see who is involved in organizations. We spend most of our time, quite boringly, actually, reading through corporate documents, annual reports, board member biographies. We also have, here in the United States, we have something called C-SPAN, which...
the Australian version of that here is called APAC, and it's equally as uninteresting.
You say that, but when you look at the news, if you look at the commercial news, they'll say, oh, well, this happened today in Parliament, and in our case, it would be Congress or the Senate, and it's some journalist who might actually have been asleep while he was there and read the Cliff Notes, did the little abstract, and said, oh, well, here's the conclusion. But when you actually hear the elitist douchebags themselves saying the words, and they're coming out of their mouths differently, it's really interesting. And sometimes it's hilarious. And the truth is often right there, hidden in plain sight, but you never heard about it on the news. In fact, quite the opposite is true. I'll give you a great example. We have this crazy law in the United States called Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And this was set up during the Clinton years. Bill Clinton decided it was probably a good idea that gays could serve in the military as long as they didn't tell anybody and no one was allowed to ask. This was the genesis of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And when President Obama was coming into power, and I do call it power, one of his campaign promises was, you know, hey, I'm for black people, I'm for gay people, I'm for the meek and the crippled and the weary, and we're going to get rid of this. And he signed a bill to great fanfare called the Don't Ask, Don't Tell Repeal Act. And the media just went off and convinced everybody that it's now okay for gays to serve openly in the military. Quite the opposite is true. In fact, and it's only a 1.5-page bill. It's not a huge document. You just have to go and get it and read it. And journalists anywhere could do this, but apparently they don't. It expressly states that the law remains in effect until a number of things happen. And at that point, and then only 60 days after that, will the law actually be repealed. And what is required is a multiple certification from multiple arms of the military. Here we are, we're almost a year later since the president signed this. But if you go on the street and ask anyone, can gays serve openly in the military, they will tell you, well, yes, of course. President Obama fixed that and he changed that when he didn't. And these are huge untruths that are being propagated through the corporate media, who either have an agenda to do this or are just too stupid, lazy, and not active to go and get the truth.
It's partially because they've got to do that soundbite thing. They've got to succinctly deliver what happened, that they don't want to take the time to do this.
Well, why do they have to do that? Because they're commercial. They have to go take a break. Well, look at who owns them. We only have a few owners of the media in the United States. General Electric, who, by the way, are the largest supplier of things that blow people up. Jet engines, tanks, all kinds of great stuff that kill brown people in sandy places. They own NBC, MSNBC, CNBC. These are big news channels. And having worked in media organizations, there is a culture and things do trickle down. And there are things that are just not said, not addressed, or not discussed. And some places, in some cases, I would say actual propaganda.
Let's take an example when you're working at MTV. If you were saying something that wasn't going with what the corporate line was, would there be a quiet knock at the door? Would there be a midday meeting? How would it go down?
Happened to me day one. The minute I was at MTV, I knew it was bad. I was the new guy. I was brought in from Europe. Ooh, he's crazy. He's European. And they set up an interview with me with TV Guide, at the time the largest publication, print publication in the United States. And they interviewed me, and I said, and they said, well, who have you met? The show I'd done in the Netherlands was everyone kind of came through, and who did you like? Who didn't like? Ah, I said, Madonna. I didn't like her too much. She was kind of bitchy. Well, I thought the PR woman was going to have a hernia. Oh, you can't say that. Oh, we don't talk this way about our artists. So that was a no-no, and I got in trouble from day one for that. But even on the other side, I'll give you an example. Michael Jackson, who, by the way, not a pedophile, a very sweet guy, asexual at best, and we could go into that one day if you want. And we have discussed that ad nauseum on the program as well. They had a deal with him, and the deal was that he would give MTV the planetary premiere of one of his new videos and appear on the MTV Video Music Awards. But there were two parts of the deal that had to be fulfilled on MTV's side. One was they would create an award in his name, the Michael Jackson Video Vanguard Artist of the Year Award. And the second one is, and this was part of the deal, people, I guess someone kind of forgot about how the deal was put together, which happened with CBS or Sony, obviously, at the time. It was going to be a Michael Jackson weekend. So we all, we taped that on a Thursday. And, this whole Michael Jackson weekend and everything was awesome. And it was, and we're premiering this video and doing all this stuff. And Fridays were a very slow day. We'd have a little bit to tape for Monday, perhaps. But we all got these, and when I say we, it's the VJs, we all got these frantic calls. Oh, we got to come in. We're doing a super long day tomorrow because as a part of the agreement, we were supposed to, whenever we said Michael Jackson, we were supposed to say Michael Jackson, comma, the king of pop. And since we hadn't done that because the memo hadn't come down from the office to the studio, we had to retape everything to fulfill our contractual obligation with Sony Records. All media, if it's commercial, even if you have sponsors, that's a form of commercialism or underwriters or whatever you want to call it, is always skewed and unjust and just not truthful.
The biggest barrier to people absorbing shows like No Agenda is that they've got to, instead of switching on the dial, getting the show straight away, they've actually got to make a bit of an effort to find it and do a bit of work in downloading a podcast or getting onto the stream. And I think that's your biggest barrier. How do you hope to overcome that?
I don't know if that's our biggest barrier. What's so great about our audience is, and again, they are producers, they are very current with how people are consuming media. I have a 20-year-old daughter. She doesn't have a television. She doesn't listen to radio. She watches and listens to everything on her computer. Thank God she also reads regular books, which it gives me hope. What's nice is people have created apps, very simple for the masses. You know, you go get an app and you just click on it and it just kind of works. So all of that is getting quite easy to consume. I would say the hardest part for people to become a part of the community and listening is when you first hear the show, it's like someone saying, you see that color there that you think is black? I'm sorry, that's white. That's very hard for people, and it takes some effort, and it takes a while to get over it. But once you wake up to the reality of the Matrix-like world that we actually live in, the world of, you know, eat your veggies, go to school, do your homework, go to university, get a degree, get a job, pay your taxes, go home, watch television, make sure you shop, you are free. Once you see that that's not true, that you're actually a slave of the system, then you really get into the show, because we don't sit there and bitch and moan about it. We turn it into humor, because I think we've always been screwed throughout hundreds of years. It's just now we actually have the information at our fingertips to say, well, here you go. This is the truth, and this is what you're being told. And once that veil lifts, it's kind of like the guy behind the curtain in The Wizard of Oz. It's like, wow, really? That's pretty amazing. And you feel better about yourself, because you can then watch news or television or whatever messages are being propagated around you, and you can kind of laugh and say, I know what the truth is. As long as you know it, you may not be able to change it, and I don't think we're changing the world necessarily, but I think you said it correctly in your intro. We are changing people's reality, and your reality is yours, and it's your truth.
You're listening to Adam Curry, co-host of the No Agenda Show at noagendashow.com. Adam, with that heavy weight on your shoulders, you say you deal with humor. How do you feel on a daily basis when you know most people are accepting what they call consensus reality, and you're seeing another way that people just never see?
I feel very happy that for every person who we turn on to our reality, let me put it that way, it delights me that that is happening. I feel bad for people who don't see it or don't see it yet. I also see it as a challenge. Your listeners might be interested to know that, of course, we don't have any commercials on our program. We do it twice a week. It's two and a half hours, kind of when we run out, then we're done. It's Thursday morning in the United States and Sunday morning. In order to do this work, we can't, my co-host John and I can't really do anything else. So we started a while back and we said, well, this is value for value. If you like what we're doing, you're going to have to support us. And just like Hollywood, we'll give you a credit if you fund our program. So if you watch any television program, you'll see credits. You'll see executive producer and producer and co-executive producer and created by and co-creators and all. The first 5 minutes is just titles. These are the people who have either done something for that program, but typically have financed it. Credit is an important thing to people. It means a lot to them. And it means a lot to us. We've taken it a step further. Since in the United States we can do this, we also offer knighthoods. So if you've supported the show.
Right, because it's almost impossible to become a knight, a sir of anything in the U.S. because you're not English subjects. So why not create your own?
Yes, and who says we can't, right? I mean, you can start a church. You can become a minister of your own church. That's perfectly legal. So we have knighthoods, and we measure that by a support of the show in excess of $1,000. And you join the No Agenda roundtable of the knights, and we also have dames. In a way, it's a status symbol, but there are certain responsibilities, and the knights do look out for each other, and they do have, and they're all around the world.
We hereby knight thee, Sir Michael Garcia, Knight of the No Agenda Roundtable. Please join us here with other knights and dames. Protect your country. Be free. And enjoy our hookers and blow.
Is that music different?
Yeah. Yeah, no. Someone sent it in.
It's more dramatic.
I kind of like it. I kind of like it. It was kind of nice.
So every morning when I wake up, I am thankful, and I think my rent was paid by the people who value the work that I'm doing. It's a very old-fashioned media model, yet very futuristic, and it's working, and that can only be because the audience is not the product. The actual product we are bringing them is the product, and they like it.
So, Adam Curry, when you wake up in the morning and you turn on your mainstream news media and you see they're dealing with some heavy political issue, and instead of going to someone who potentially might have studied the subject, they go to a blogger. How does that make you feel, being someone who wants to empower the people? Suddenly a blogger is there, which you might think is good, but you don't. We don't know who the blogger is.
No, I'm very skeptical in most cases. And when I see a blogger or someone who is tweeting, or even worse, when I see news media saying, well, here's what's being tweeted, I immediately think, oh, really? Well, who's behind that and who is this person? And I spend a fair amount of time looking at people, looking into their backgrounds, their biographies, who they are. You know, a very famous example of this is when the United States needed to move into Iraq for all of the reasons that I think are pretty well known now. There was a Hill and Knowlton was the again, look out for these guys. They have an office in Australia as well, I believe. They set up a press conference, and they had a woman who they had contracted. She actually turned out to be the daughter of a politician who told this elaborate story about Saddam Hussein's guards who were throwing babies out of incubators. And the world was in horror, and oh my goodness, we have to go. Oh, this man must be stopped. Does it sound familiar, by the way? Does it sound like Gaddafi? Does it sound like Assad in Syria? Does it sound like the Ivory Coast? They use the same script over and over and over again. And people buy it. People just absolutely buy into it. But when you can start to expose some of this, and that is now well documented, there's real truth that comes to you. When it comes to bloggers and people tweeting, I mean, it's well known and admitted and documented that the State Department of the United States has what Hillary Lucifer Clinton calls techno experts, and they are out there tweeting and they're Facebooking, and they do entire seminars, and they bring in people from Egypt. They brought people in, taught them how to set up Facebook groups, you know, which is great. But whose message is being propagated? I wager to say that is the message of the United States and not necessarily of the people in Egypt themselves. Understand that there are people who are unhappy about their government in every society. There are good and bad things about each individual country and the leaders that they have. But the CIA is well known and for going into countries and stirring stuff up and stirring the pot and financing people and getting people to revolt. Isn't it interesting how the Libyan protesters went from protesters to rebels, complete with tanks, and they even had a jet, I think. They had a fighter jet.
Now, what was the goal? That they were supposed to have a jet, and then something went wrong with it.
Yeah, I think they ran out of coal for the jet or whatever. But more interesting is they also all of a sudden had a central bank. That was important. That's what I do as a protester. I don't go throw sticks and stones. No, I set up a central bank, and I immediately interface with the United States Federal Reserve, and they're on the task now to get a $3 billion loan. This is obviously a scam.
There's a subprime loan market now in Libya?
No, money is control. So when you control the central bank, I mean, one of the theories for this Libyan invasion that we've discussed is the fact that Gaddafi, who may be a crazy guy, maybe a poor dresser, but he is quite respected in Africa. He was working on something called the gold dinar, and the gold dinar would soon be used amongst many African nations, certainly within the north, but also China was talking about using the gold dinar and using that as a standard for the trade in oil. And the United States is very protective of its dollar being the currency of oil, which is very similar to what Saddam Hussein did. If you'll recall, he was also talking about trading his oil in euros. So this is all about money and control. Boy, you've got a nice little gang running the show there in Australia.
Now, what's your problem with our prime minister?
She said that there would be no carbon taxes, and the first thing she does is says, well, let's do some carbon taxes.
It could have been political expediency because she has to rule with the Green Party.
Yeah, I've never heard a kid say, I did steal that apple, but Mom, it was political expediency. Please don't punish me. That's bull crap. It really is. And she's just horrible. She gives me the willies.
Is it the visual thing about her? The way she talks? What is it?
Doesn't help. That's for sure. Is this tax will ultimately go to the World Bank, the IMF, this and indirectly to, well, just name them, Citibank, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs. It's such an unbelievable scam. Just go save the earth. And the earth is perfectly capable of saving itself. It's about the people will have to die off, I guess, eventually.
To the skeptics, to the people that say, Adam, where's the evidence? And people always, they want an evidence trial. They want a solid evidence trial. How do you get your evidence?
Well, it depends on what topic. A lot of the evidence is just right there in documentation. I talk a lot about earthquake machines. And I, for some of your listeners, may have heard of HAARP, H-A-A-R-P. It is a system that shoots energy waves against the ionosphere and then bounces back down to Earth. It is called a research project. We have these stations all over the world, but the United States, Alaska, one of the most prominent ones. They also have them in China. But there's a belief that it can do a lot more. It could actually cause earthquakes and other types of natural disasters. And people laugh at me and I say, well, okay, but now let's go look at the statement from Secretary of Defense William Cohen, who in the 80s in senatorial discussions, which is all public documents, you can get it right from the .gov websites here in the U.S., he literally says there are now nations that have weapons that can create earthquakes, floods, tsunamis, and other natural disasters. This is very frightening. We need to have this capability too. Now, is that enough proof?
You think he might just be looking for more funding for research for that?
Well, he was the Secretary of Defense. I think that they would rather make tanks and bombs and guns and other things because that's much easier to make. You know, you make one of these and it's like, that's kind of it. I don't think so, Maynard. I don't think so. Sometimes I don't have an answer. Global warming, which, by the way, didn't work, so they had to call it climate change. We saw that rebranding take place. Many people believe in this, agree with it. I don't subscribe to it, and I've come up with a very simple question. You say to someone, do you believe in peak oil, i.e. that we're running out of oil and that we have to change into some kind of alternative energy source? Most people who believe in global warming also believe in peak oil. And I say, problem solved. We don't have to do a thing at all because we're going to run out of oil. We may not be able to drive our cars, but the earth is not going to heat up and we're not going to die because we're running out of it anyway. So stop and stop taxing me on this phantom stuff.
You've actually probably got an answer for this. Nap and trade. Nap and trade.
You mean a nap for humanity?
That's right. Your nap for humanity project that could, in fact, save the planet by doing nothing. What could be more appealing?
Yes, it is. Well, indeed. So as this carbon credit scam is coming to life, and by the way, it's interesting to note that the very first and largest exchange, so this is very much like a Wall Street exchange system, it's computers, was owned by Al Gore, the very guy who brought you global warming, actually already had the carbon credits exchange system all set up because he knew what he was doing. He's a very smart businessman, and this is part of the scam. So there are many, 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 many companies who have jumped onto this bandwagon, take an airplane flight. There's always a little checkbox now that says, oh, would you like to offset your carbon emissions for this flight? You can tick the box here. We'll add another $10 or $25 to your airfare, and you're a good human resource, a good human being. Now, of course, what happens with that money is it goes into one of these stupid scams. So we did some calculations. Actually, we didn't. One of our producers did. That when you sleep, as a human being, you are actually emitting less CO2, this dangerous gas, which trees and plants actually seem to like very much. You emit less of that. Therefore, the more you nap, the more you save humanity. So we came up with napforhumanity.com, and you can buy pillows, all kinds of sleeping gear. And when you participate in Napping for Humanity, you are indeed saving the world.
Nap and trade.
I don't think you can get the kind of traction with a pun that you can with a legitimate Nap for Humanity type of a moniker. I just don't think puns...
No, I agree.
Have the,
I
don't think... Give me an example of a pun that has any traction.
It doesn't matter because we already cut the jingles.
Nap for Humanity.
So it doesn't matter. We're already there.
Adam Curry, let's move to a very recent issue and your opinion on it. Why do you think people are so suspicious of the official Osama bin Laden assassination story?
Well,
almost immediately, people are going, nah, that's not right. They don't believe it straight up.
Well, they really fumbled a lot on this one. Already, this is not being discussed. First, it was, we went in and he used a woman as a human shield. And then all of a sudden, actually, someone jumped in front and he was unarmed. So they had to retract all of that. So when you come out with your initial statement and you have to retract it, that's not necessarily a very good thing. Also, you know, we threw the body in the sea, a part of a Muslim burial ceremony. Yeah, I know a lot of people who practice Islam who live in the sea. I think usually they're buried in the desert with their head towards Mecca. So we don't have a body, we don't have the evidence, we're not going to release the pictures, all of this. I think in general, though, in the United States, I think people do believe that he was killed. The way, how, and why is, that's questionable. You know what? What's more important is, you know, there's a new episode of the Kardashians coming up. You know, people are just so anesthetized that they don't even care, I think, anymore. It's like, okay, ding dong, the witch is dead. Whatever, move on next. Oh, they're probably going to start attacking us here in the homeland, as we call it. So, now I guess we should, we need naked body scanners when we go shopping or go to a sporting event or get on the train now being proposed. They've been beaten into submission. Now, there's a lot of people who are skeptical in general about Osama bin Laden. And that's been going on for years and years and years. The timing of this was very interesting. Unfortunately, most people shrug and go, whatever. Okay, maybe, maybe not. I don't care.
Why don't you start smaller then? Why don't you become Mayor Adam Curry? I mean,
no.
Do your own political thing. Make your own change in your local area. Run for local tax collector or something.
Well, I prefer to inspire people to do that. I think that's much more useful. And it's beautiful when you get...
The rent's too damn high guy.
Yeah, he's got something going on for him. He's pretty, you know,
I represent the rent is too damn high party. People are working 8 hours a day and 40 hours a week, and some a third job. My main job is to provide a roof over your head, food on the table, and money in your pocket. The rent too damn high movement, the people I'm here to represent can't afford to pay their rent. Listen, someone's child stomach just growled. Did you hear it? Got to listen like me.
Okay.
Let's
Mr.
talk
McMillan?
About the issue.
Mr.
People can't
Mr.
afford
Cuomo,
to pay their rent.
30 Stop. Seconds for you, sir.
Rent is too damn high.
I don't know how much of a platform he had, but I like it when I see young kids sending us emails, students. This is not going to change in my lifetime. I have no illusions about that. And it's probably going to have to get a lot worse before it gets any better. But at the end of the day, you're on this earth in this particular dimension or reality or whatever it is. And I'd like to enjoy my time here. And I'm not going to spend it being bitter and angry. And I don't want anyone else to spend it being bitter and angry either. But you can be happy and productive and positive, and when you know what the truth is, you can kind of skirt around all the BS, and you can have a great life, and you can change things one step at a time and help. And it's exactly the same for Australia. I have to say, by the way, I love Australia. I was there for 2 weeks doing a documentary in the early 90s. To me, it was the perfect mix of kind of old world British tradition, which is logical why some of that's in there. American commercialism. I love your malls. But also a Dutch Something very Dutch there as well, having grown up in the Netherlands. Something we call gezelligheid, which is kind of, doesn't really translate, but it's kind of coziness. And my fiance and I have discussed many times, not only paying another visit, but actually would consider a move.
Look, and we've got a sense of humor about even the most serious things.
This is so incredibly important. The sense of humor is really what it is. We're losing that in America. I think that we're trying to bring some of that back. It's not cynicism, though. In the United Kingdom, it's cynicism. And it's just like, oh, whatever, you know, bohica, as they say. Bend over, here it comes again. They've given up. You need to have a fair or a healthy dose of humor, but also the willingness to stand up and say, I don't think so.
I've got a couple of listener questions here through Twitter, if you don't mind. Can I keep you much longer, Adam? I know you've got a life to live there.
No, I'm delighted to speak. Maynard, I have to thank you. You've been such a great promoter of the show, and people who listen to your programming and ours, then there's a crossover. We'll know this for sure. But you're always sending us interesting things. You're a great contributor, a great producer, and I highly appreciate it. And I'm just happy I can repay the favor in some small way.
I started listening when John was going on about the great soy milk conspiracy, the great debacle over soy milk, which he's been very silent on lately.
Yeah, well, he's an old guy. You know, he's got other things to deal with.
I don't like drying my hands at the airport. I want a towel. I want a paper towel.
Does he even read his mail?
He misses a lot, and he just can't be bothered usually. Oh, it's hard to say.
And what's happened with Leo? Is he still going to be on Leo's show? Because I enjoy his input into Leo's stuff.
Yeah, I hope so. I don't know. That is kind of weird that he hasn't been on in over a month now. I don't know if there's anything. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but he hasn't been asked on in a while. I certainly miss him. I love listening / watching to This Week in Tech, and when John's on, it's great. And John's not really like me. He's not really left or right. He just has no agenda and calls it as he says it. I think that kind of that doesn't always jibe well.
Bit of a couple of tweets here. People have asked me to ask you. Have you noticed that two or three times now on two or three different shows, Leo Laporte has used the squirrel sample?
Yes, I have noticed that.
Squirrel!
What is that squirrel thing you keep playing?
Well, didn't you know that squirrels are now attacking people? Squirrels are attacking people. There are evil squirrels. This is big news. Squirrel!
It's okay. That is a huge compliment to me when a meme from our show propagates out into other programming. I love it.
I'm a big fan of the Nothing to See Here jingle, because if ever a jingle was true, that is.
Don't look over here.
Nothing to see here.
Ooh, look at that.
Sir Jeff Smith, one of our knights, is he's a musician in Nashville. He's a brilliant guy. He plays at one of these crazy dueling piano bars where you know, the audience calls something out and they play the song, and it's just a one big party. He has an uncanny talent for creating very hooky commercial jingles and short songs. And this, of course, we learned this in the 50s, jingles for products really do work. They really, you know, they stay in your head. And if they've got the right, I call it the musicule, kind of the molecule of music, it embeds itself into your brain. And you can just be walking somewhere. All of a sudden you're singing, you know, nothing to see here. Oh, look at that.
Don't look over here.
Nothing to see here.
Ooh, look at that.
You know, our sponsorship jingle, Dvorak.
Dvorak.org. /NA.
Or the new one, which I just love. It's part of our new Department of Homeland Security campaign here, is if you see something, say something.
If you see something, say something.
In a completely non-threatening way, which makes it funnier.
Exactly. And it is humorous, but it also we're trying to sell that to the Department of Homeland Security. We figure since these guys easily pay $18 million for a stupid website, we could probably get $50,000 for that jingle. It would be great for them if they really want people to rat on each other. And if, my neighbor looks kind of suspicious, I should call the authorities, which, by the way, is exactly what happened. Well, in Germany and Russia, people ratting on each other. We had secret police rat out their neighbors.
Got Adam Curry here answering a few questions from various Twitter people, if indeed they are Twitter people. Look, we've got
Who knows? They could be the State Department.
Look, we've got fake Paul Keating here. So we've got the fake ex-Prime Minister of Australia. He wants to know, what's it like now that you're outside the you're not sucking the corporate cock and you're now doing your own thing? How does that feel?
Can you say that on the radio in Australia, or does that part get cut out?
Oh, well, that's specially for the podcast, or there'll be a chicken going off just during the cockpit there. But everyone who's ever done a corporate gig as a performer knows exactly what you think, because you're their whore for the time they've massively paid for you to be there. And how's it feel you don't have to do that as much anymore?
Right. Well, don't hold back, Maynard. Don't sugarcoat your own feelings there. That kind of slipped in.
I've been at gigs I've hated, and you just had to think of the money and then look at your watch.
Right. Well, so it is the most liberating experience I have ever had. I do not have to dance to anyone's pipes, no kowtowing to any commercial interest whatsoever, because we simply don't have commercials yet. We're getting paid for the work we do by people supporting the show. Maynard, I can't express enough how fantastic it is. So from time to time, I do have to absolutely go and suck some corporate cock, and it's nasty, and I feel dirty after it.
And Adrian Logue of Sydney, he wants to know, how is your George W. Obama impersonation coming along? You've been working...
Hello, everybody!
Oh, hang on, do it again.
Hello, everybody!
Okay, it's very poor so far, but it's...
Hello, everybody! I'm coming to you from General Electric's.
It's hard. I haven't practiced enough, but John actually caught on to this. He said, you know, when you do, hello, everybody, that is exactly George W. Obama. And I am going to practice and get this right, because I think it would be hilarious on the show.
And Adam Curry, co-host of the No Agenda show with John C. Dvorak, how can we tell who the elite are and why should we be wary of them?
First of all, I think you probably automatically feel it. I've had the good fortune to be around, and by the way, I've been extremely rich in my life. I'm talking, you know, $60, $70 million in paper. I've had ups and downs. I've been rich. I've been not so rich. Right now, I'm not so rich, but I feel richer than I ever have in my entire life. When you travel in those circles, and particularly in a smaller country like the Netherlands, where I was extremely wealthy, you meet the elites, and you know immediately they talk differently about other people. These are the people who treat waiters like dirt. People who are serving them, they treat them like servants. And it can be a secretary, it can be an assistant, it can be a bus driver. This is always a surefire sign. If they, in addition to that, have money or control money, they're an elitist.
Why should we be wary of them? What is there to fear from the elite?
Well, they're the enemy. They are the only thing the elite want to do is keep us as good human resources. This is the whole reason why this word exists, by the way. You are a human resource. A resource is meant to be mined and meant to be delved and meant to be have the energy or the lifeblood sucked out of them. And that's all that they do. This is disgusting to me. This makes me physically ill to think about a group of people who actually think about other human beings in this manner. It's horrible, and you have to be very wary of them. Don't be a slave. Don't shut up and sit down, and don't take any crap. They are just people like you.
And what is the best way to combat them?
There's nothing they hate worse, the elites, because you got to get under their skin, right? Because when you get under their skin, then they start to make mistakes. And when they make mistakes, eventually they evaporate. It's almost like throwing water on the Wicked Witch of the West. So I like to irritate them. I like to get under their skin and make them crazy. Because when you make them crazy, they go off. And when they lose it, then they can actually lose their position. And the primary way I do that is by, and John actually probably subconsciously started this, we call them by different names. So, you know, everybody knows that it's Barack Hussein Obama, but we call him George W. Obama.
Hello, everybody.
everybody knows that it's Hillary Clinton. I call her Lucifer Clinton. And it and just these little things, because of course, you know, O'Biden means, well, you really want to be president, but you can't be because you're not Obama, you're O'Biden. And it, that stuff propagates. They do hear about it, and eventually that irritates them. And the more you irritate them, they're going to get because they're just humans. They have emotions. They're going to get angry. They explode, and then they lose all their power.
Adam Curry, thank you for propagating your formula, coming here and hitting me in the mouth.
It's quite a pleasure to do that, and anytime in the morning. Maynard, thank you again for all the support you've been giving us, and I owe you a massive quantities of beer when we get our ass down there.
Yeah.
Ah, fuck it, I gotta get down there. This is pissing me off.
Says he's doing some sort of a podcast. It's pretty suspicious if you ask me.
If you see something, say something.
On maynard.com.au. Hey, you!